Welcome to Jazz Happens, the podcast discussing jazz in St. Louis from the artist's perspective.
Jazz Happens is brought to you by the Young Friends of Jazz St. Louis.
And Drinks and Jazz at Nancy's.
Produced by Confluence Studios. So, Bad Plus, Reed Anderson, Oren Evans, Dave King. Thanks for joining us. Your latest album, Never Stop, was recorded in the studio with your newest member, pianist Oren Evans, who had only been with the band for about a year, replacing your original pianist, Ethan Iverson. Is that right? Iverson, did I say that right? Was this new album sort of a response to Ethan's departure in a way that solidifies and unifies the new lineup and sort of resets the band's compass as you move forward?
First of all, it's Never Stop 2 is the name of the record.
Oh,
we have another record called Never Stop. Gotcha. That's why I wanted to let you know that.
Okay.
And I'll just jump in and say for us, it wasn't an idea of, you know, continuation post Ethan. We had no thoughts of Ethan at all in making this record.
Okay.
So it was more like Reed and I as founding members of the band, and, you know, we've always challenged the idea that the pianist leads the band.
Mm-hmm.
If you actually look at the artistic output, you'd see that a larger amount of original music was contributed by Reed and myself. So when we decided to continue the band after Ethan wanted to depart, actually over the last several years, it was a very mutual feeling. We were just trying to figure out a way to do it gracefully, since we wanted everyone to feel good about their careers moving forward.
Yeah.
And when we decided to move forward, Oren was the only pianist we would even consider talking to. We actually thought of Oren several times over the years, and because Reed and Oren go way, way back in their friendship, and I've known Oren quite a while as well, and the way that he, you know, is as a person, as a man, and as a musician, we felt like it would be a good fit if he wanted to do it. And that's all it was. It was just based on we wanted to continue the group, since it was a very dear part of our artistic statement.
Mm-hmm.
And it would only work, we felt, with this particular person.
Well, it seems to have worked out well for everybody, I suppose, if he was the only choice. Moving along, unless anybody else would like to add something to what was said, you know, it's obvious the Bad Plus is influenced by lots of music other than jazz.
Yeah, if you guys want to talk about maybe, I mean, you guys have a vast, vast swath of influences. If you guys could kind of talk about maybe when you started the band, what inspired you to kind of have a mesh of, you know, sort of this jazz format with other, you know, other types of music, and maybe what specific artists inspire you guys as musicians?
Well, I mean, it's true that we, I think we're not unique in that respect. I think most people of, you know, our generation or any generation really are interested in lots of kinds of music. We arrived at a point in history where I think a lot of people desired to have a band and develop a group sound and to have something that was sort of more permissive and flexible in terms of the kind of music that we're surrounded by all the time,
mm-hmm.
that we grew up with. It just felt like an honest expression to include, you know, the fact, personally, I was introduced to music through rock radio growing up in the Twin Cities.
Totally.
I didn't have come from a jazz culture in any sense. And I still very much love rock and pop music or whatever you want to call it. You know,
yeah.
There's
mm-hmm.
so many labels for this
sure.
stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But classical music as well and jazz as well. You know, like sometimes the Bad Plus is presented incorrectly as something that's kind of in opposition to jazz, which we're not at all. We love jazz and have devoted our lives to, you know, to trying to honor that history and develop our own voices, you know, in as part of that lineage.
Mm-hmm.
But the purpose of the band is really to be first and foremost that a band, you know, capital B, and make this group music and allow everybody to be themselves within this group. And that means if someone's into contemporary classical music, we allow that in whatever form it arrives, or if someone is, you know, leaning some song is inspired is more of a jazz oriented composition, then we go there. But I think these days, like, it's so wide open and everybody is so exposed and so genuinely interested in so many kinds of music. It just feels, it's more of just a natural thing rather than like a conscious decision in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what's so cool about the Bad Plus, because, you know, when you guys started almost 20 years ago, well, I guess you were playing longer than that. And Keith and I are both musicians, and I mean, we played rock back then, and I remember the late 90s being everything was in a box and everything was really sort of narrow. And I think you guys broke that mold wide open. And you're right, now it seems like everything is so much more accepted and people tend to be more open to a much more diverse group of influences. That's cool that you guys, I think we're kind of the leaders in that. And it seems to work so well in the format that you guys have, where you can sort of openly introduce anything, like you said. It's really cool.
I think we did take more criticism than a group would, even remotely close to a group would today.
Yeah,
I
agree.
And that's actually something I think we've discussed in the past, is that, also certain aspects of the classic piano trio that we challenged dynamically. These were absolutely stylistic, aesthetic decisions that were being made, not based on some sort of limitation. Like, we wanted to be able to play this sort of classic piano trio language.
Yeah.
So, but we couldn't do it, so we had to come up with this other idea. And so, since the get-go, the band has been a little art,
Uh-huh.
It's almost like some of the great painter art communes of some, generations of artists that all played together or painted similar styles or did whatever. Mm-hmm. I just think that, and that's why even moving forward with Oren, I think his musical past has shown so much breadth as well, challenging different ideas of what jazz is, how it can be influenced by pop and R&B and electronic music and everything. And so I think that in that way, our continuation with this openness is all that's important to us. But we do find that it's interesting, like today, you definitely see this sort of even from DJ mashup culture from 10 years ago, even just all of the ways that certain walls are being pushed away from genre, and we feel right at home, of course, in those aspects, and this is like a safe space to be able to like bring whatever you have, and everybody's going to try and honor it the best they can.
So yeah, it's like now you're allowed to sort of bring these things together and put them, together in a way that hasn't been done before and wouldn't have necessarily been accepted before.
Right, far less criticism, on our first record. Sometimes we get known for these reinterpretations of music we've done only, even though we've been a predominantly original band. But in many ways, when we hear that, and I know we continue to feel this way, is that, to us, it shines a light on the uniqueness of how we approached it. We didn't necessarily say, well, we're just going to turn it into a jazz tune. Mm-hmm. We're going to take Aphex Twin and then we're going to put some jazz harmony on it.
Mm-hmm.
And all these sort of obvious decisions that were also part of the history of taking some pop music post the 60s and, putting some, wrestling some jazz harmony into it. You know what I mean? Like maybe Herbie Hancock doing the Joni Mitchell record or whatever, mm-hmm. which is totally valid and amazing and a part of that history. But one of the things that we discussed was taking the music and meeting it on its own, in its own territory. Like we were going to take it apart and make it ours, not necessarily make it jazz first.
Yep.
It's going to be ours first.
Uh-huh.
Then maybe it's something else at that point.
Yeah.
Right. And in that way, that created this sort of like, wait a minute, this is this piano trio or piano, bass, and drums trio, whatever you want to call it.
Sort of let the art happen.
Yeah, it's again this more conceptual idea, not based in like feeling like we had to be a part of any tradition other than the tradition of exploratory music and creative music,
mm-hmm.
which is what we feel. That's why we meet on the playing field of jazz always, is because we're improvisers. mm-hmm. but also we're creative musicians. Uh-huh. We're not making decisions based on some sort of commercial output.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask, you know, it seems like you have all these ingredients in a big old pot and you cook it up and you come out with a jazz band. And I was going to ask why, but maybe he just said that because you all are, you know, you like to experiment and improvise and, you know, you're musicians. So maybe that was just how it was bound to happen. And maybe you didn't know it at first, or maybe you don't know it when you're starting a new song, but that's just kind of how it ends up being.
Feel good about that?
Sorry, I made a pot of soup over the weekend. So I was thinking about a pot. Soup. And I
Or usually talks about it in terms of salad.
Again, it's like, yeah, the salad.
Yeah. It's not, yeah, there's the salad. It's definitely
Tell
never.
Us about the croutons.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, all I can say is we consider ourselves at the core of what we're trying to do with this group. If you had to put it in some sort of genre, we've never felt like we are distant from what you would call jazz in any way, mm-hmm. especially modern jazz. Mm-hmm. We don't aim to sound like music from another era, but we aim to honor the musics of the other era, mm-hmm. of the other eras, all of them, mm-hmm. and we know those eras of the music. We've spent a lot of time dealing with the eras of that music, mm-hmm. and loving it with true love, not like, oh, I guess we got to be able to do this because I want to be able to be legitimate here. It's such an easy conclusion to assume when someone isn't referencing something exact that they haven't. And it's just like, you know, it's almost like people are surprised that Mark Rothko could paint realistically or something. You know what I mean? It's like, really? I mean, he didn't just start out with these giant color fields that are, it's just like there's a master's stroke in there. Mm-hmm. And do you like how I just slipped in the fact that we're masters? Did you like to slip? I compared myself to Mike Rothko? Could you guys leave all of this in?
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm just saying, like, you know, or Jean-Michel Basquiat, to make it more relevant to maybe some younger listeners, was a master of image making, and yet taking in criticism because it's not like Da Vinci's drawing book. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like. No one can do that but that person. They have an acute perception.
Yeah.
That can't be challenged. There's no way you can challenge it. So we feel we're in line with that idea that we, you know, we try to make the best personal music we can. And as jazz musicians, as improvisers, as people who've done time in all of these schools and camps, we never discuss it with each other. We never say, you know, this has got a jazzy thing to it here. I'm gonna break up the drier ride cymbal here, guys. It's always this our music statement, but couched in this idea that at first and foremost we're improvisers and we come from a text of all of the great masters that we've tried to honor.
Well, and as you said, you've dealt with the music. You know, previous music, current music, so you know it well, so you're able to sort of pull nuances and pull sounds that you feel would be appropriate in something that you're approaching in a fresh way.
Yes, the best we can. Yeah.
So speaking of those beginnings, and a lot of our listeners, you know, a big component of Jazz St. Louis is Jazz U and Jazz Academy, so our listeners are also student musicians. So speaking of, you know, the beginnings, can you just talk about, you know, what got you into your instrument, maybe early influences, you know, whether it's jazz and non-jazz? You know, you said you started with rock, as a lot of people do, I think. Can you just kind of each of you kind of explore that and maybe mention some names that our students can take home and go back and reference?
For me, I came... Oddly enough, I loved musicals. I grew up in a household. My father was a playwright, and my mother was a singer, mainly opera, but she did a lot of show tunes and things like that. So it wasn't necessarily, for me, a genre of music that got... It was just all this, you know, whether it was stuff from, like, My Funny Valentine that I had no idea was a jazz standard. Mm-hmm. I knew it, you know, because my mom would sing it as a show tune. Mm-hmm. So that's how I was introduced to a lot of the, you know, the music that I ended up checking out.
Cool.
And then moved to Philadelphia. And then when I got to Philadelphia, organist by the name of Trudy Pitts became like a mentor to me, and just started really getting into the piano, which I wasn't into, even though it was always in the house. But I moved into a neighborhood that didn't have have as many kids, because you would be talking to, like, you know, the amazing freestyler right now, because I was totally going to be a BMX freestyler. Like, that's what I was going to do. I was going to ride for GT. Uh-huh. But ended up moving to Philly. And in that area where there weren't a lot of kids, I started that connection with the piano. So, that's for me. And I just made the connection of what I heard my mother singing or my uncles. So it wasn't like I got into jazz. I just got into music.
Music, yeah, and cool. And
slowly into the, you know, met jazz.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Reed?
Yeah, you know, I think I had a pretty conventional path in music in the beginning anyway, of just, you know, playing in garage bands and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I was drawn to the bass for some reason. I don't know. I mean, I guess I know, but...
So it's always been bass for you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I played some other instruments when I was young, but but bass was the one I really made a choice. You know, because I love the function of it in the music, and it just spoke to me. And Dave and I are from the same suburb of Minneapolis, as well as a great pianist named Craig Taborn, who your listeners may know, or if they don't know, they should know, because he's amazing too. But you know, just we had this little community of people who were curious about what else was out there, and. You know, Dave and I would go to the library and check out records. And, you know, I remember thinking, oh, I've heard of this guy, John Coltrane. What does John Coltrane do? You know, so you go to the library and you get a John Coltrane record, and you're like, oh, okay. And one thing leads to another. And then, you know, I remember going over to Craig's house, and he, you know, he would be playing me like Ornette Coleman, you know, or some stuff I hadn't heard before, and these things just kind of feed on themselves, and then one thing leads to another. And I remember as a bass player hearing Charlie Hayden and being really inspired by him, and feeling like, okay, this is what I, you know, could see myself doing, and eventually, you know, seeking out the acoustic bass, but I think that's really what it is for me. It was just a matter of what else is out there? What other kind of music? I like this, what I'm hearing on the radio, but then, you know, maybe there's
more
something
out
else.
There, yeah. Right? Yeah, that's not immediately available.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Dave?
Yeah. Similar. Obviously, he's mentioning I was in Reed's life back then when we were like 14, 15 years old. One thing I always think about when I think about my early discovery of music. I started playing piano when I was really young, and it was just sort of the piano repertoire. And then my parents used to listen to both jazz and 1950s rock and roll. And so I like all that stuff. And my dad would listen to, you know, I think more swing era jazz music. But I think then of course being around rock music, I had an older brother who turned me on to things like Black Sabbath and all these other things in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, new wave then. And things like that. And then I think my discovery of jazz was this sort of idea that I was already playing drums for 3 or 4 years at that point. It's always based on what's next, what's the next discovery of like, it always felt like I wanted to hear what the furthest reaches of whatever was out there. And so it's like if you started with just rock music, the natural progression might be some sort of 70s fusion thing or prog rock. Like if you all of a sudden hear Genesis and you hear like a Rush or something where you hear the musicianship through that landscape of banal, you know, whatever, rock radio, all of a sudden Tom Sawyer comes on or something. And you're just like, wait a minute, now the drums are definitely different. You know, and then, but then, so it's like what Reed said, it's like, you know, then you start hearing, you know, like, you know, for me, it was maybe the beginning of the 60s era jazz and you know, either the Ornette Coleman groups or the Coltrane, John Coltrane groups or the Miles Davis second quintet or all these other things. For me, it felt like that natural, like these are higher levels of expression, more personal levels of expression that were also in me, they triggered a real indie kind of fantasy world I had, which is to be into the music that is the most non in the mainstream.
Non-listened to.
The yeah, most abrasive. So if it'd be, you know, we grew up in Minneapolis, so you'd have the punk rock scene of Minneapolis was famous, the funk scene with Prince and with all of the other Prince bands that were huge there. Mm-hmm. And then you had, you know, all the jazz groups coming through town. So for me, it met in this area where instead of being the guy that was wearing the obvious concert shirt the next day amongst the, you know, landscape of just whatever people were being fed and just considered that's their musical culture. For me, it was always based on, oh, you know, I mean, I like Eric Dolphy. And there would be some of that stupid teenage, like, well, check out what I'm into kind of thing. And so for me, I had that desire to if it was something that was something that my friends or no one had heard of. And of course, Reed and I, and he mentions Craig, you know, then we had this little group of people. There were a few more people in it as well, turning each other on to the next thing. You know, we were really listening to Art Ensemble of Chicago now. You know, see, I remember being at Reed's house and, you know, we're just these doofuses from Minnesota, and Reed's like, man, Art Ensemble Chicago, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, now we're talking about some music that's not,
now that's obscure,
that's not something, you know, that you know, you're gonna just, you know, turn on the radio and hear, or you're not gonna be in
you have to
stupid
seek it
high
out.
School landscape of nothingness and somebody's going, man, check out, you know, Third Decade, that record's pretty killing, you know. Man, have you heard Don Moya? You know what I mean? These are not conversations you're having with many of your peers. Right. For me, that was very attractive. And when I look back and listen to the music that sort of helped inform me the most as an improviser, it always rings true that it was a thirst for something that I felt that had no... That music, to me, is indie music. That has no, like, old jazz neighborhood feel of the music. That's some like idiosyncratic members of whatever communities they were in that broke away and did something unique and original. And I don't care. There is no scene necessarily from a one area or neighbor. You could say the AACM. You could start talking about Threadgill and all these other Henry Threadgill. But to me, that's that music. That's a person that broke away from whatever they were dealing with, being in the army band, and then they're part of a scene of musicians that are doing creative music. But still, that shines bright as it's also alien, personal. That's it. That was very attractive to me, to try to make some music of my own and to still have it be informed by all this great music. So have it be informed by Black Sabbath, Art Ensemble of Chicago, Bad Brains, Rush, Genesis, Miles Davis, Peaches and Herb Reunited, which is one of my favorite tunes. No, but like great R&B, and I think that all of us really feel that way. Like, you know, we're not going to deny those things, and that's why, you know, I can hear Kenny Clarke play the ride cymbal and get just as excited and visceral as I can if you put on a Replacements tune or a Prince tune from the early days or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I should say that Reed and I grew up seeing the incredible drummer Eric Ravatt, the first drummer of Weather Report, and also Craig and Michael Bland, the drummer of Prince. We used to go, Michael Bland was always at the shows as well, the great drummer who played with Prince's New Power Generation for years, is an old friend of ours. And I remember seeing Michael sit down in his table by himself, and Craig and I and Reed watching one of the master drummers in history from 4 feet away. You know, we were the kids. They let us into the club. Mm-hmm. I don't know, still to this day, how we got into those shows all the time, but because they were in a bar, it was in a jazz club bar. But I remember that changed us. That changed us, seeing the highest level musician right in front of us.
Yeah.
And also, not every, you know, you didn't just, also, you know, you couldn't just see the highest level musician every day of, if it was an event, you know, Eric Ravatt's playing again on Wednesday, we're going, somebody get us there.
Yeah.
You know, because it was further away, he was in St. Paul or whatever.
And there we were, the devoted, the very few, seeing this heat-seeking missile playing the drums. You know what I mean? It was just like, you know, that's we all, I think, made that decision then, Reed, that that's something we wanted to do.
Yeah, and especially, like, we would go to see that, and there would be a point in the set where they would really go into this avant-garde space. Yeah. And that really was eye-opening to us, yes. You know, like, just to see that right in front of you and to see, like, some real masters doing it. Mm-hmm. I think that really, we owe a lot to that experience in terms of what we've done with our own music.
Huge, yeah. And, you know, we've let him know as well, Eric Rabat, when he's still around, you know, and when I've seen him in Minneapolis, I never fail to tell him every time that was just massive for all of us. Mm-hmm. You know? So, you know, finding someone as a young musician like that, that you can almost have some sort of your own intimacy with, you know, your own, like, I'm here, I'm one of 15 people here, I'm 15 years old, and I'm watching one of the great. Yeah, but really, you know, that can be so much heavier than being turned on by all the records and all the whatever. Yeah. If there's just a couple of people, I'm sure Oren has stories of the people that he saw in Philadelphia and as a young musician coming up and playing that can just... They might be people you haven't heard a ton of, but they're just like these figures that just turn you around and become some sort of, you know, non-personal mentor. You know, it's mm-hmm. not like Eric and I are having lunch and stuff like that. It was more like, or I should say Mr. Gravatt and I are not having lunch, but it's like, you know, I always turn to that going, man, I think about that almost every time I play the music.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think that's good information for students to think about. And, you know, we try to involve the students in this podcast a little bit, and we have a segment that we call the Jazz Academy Rapid Fire Questions from Students. We don't have new questions this time because of the holidays, the students weren't in session, whatever. So we pulled some maybe poignant questions from the past for you guys. So these are just quick answers, no big deal. About how many gigs do you think you might play in a year? How many outside of the U.S.?
Inside and outside.
In both.
50, 60 outside?
Something like that, yeah.
For everybody?
And then the same in the U.S., man.
I notice on your website your list of shows ends with a gig in the U.K. And then
that's
is that
the beginning of a tour,
yeah,
a May tour in the U.K. I mean, in all over Europe, a big May tour.
Awesome.
Cool.
But we go to Europe 2-3 times a year, once usually in the spring, once uh-huh. With the Bad Plus. We also, you know, do things with other people that we go to Europe for. And, mm-hmm. But usually it's a spring and a summer and a fall run.
That's cool. Do you play there more than the U.S.?
No, I think pretty
about
even.
The same.
Huh.
Any place in Europe that you particularly like to play? A town or a venue or anything that stands out?
I mean, me personally, I like just new places, you know, because mm-hmm. sometimes even if you do have a favorite place, you may play there like 4 or 5 times a year or maybe 2 within 2 and you're tired of it.
Yeah.
So I mean, I love every time that I've been to Europe, there's always a new place on there that I haven't been to, mm-hmm. you know, maybe cool. 1 or 2. So that's what I look forward to.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are, of course, it's fun to play in the big towns. You know, it's fun to play in Paris or in London or whatever. It should be said, one of the greatest venues on the planet is in Amsterdam. It's called the BIM House. It's a very, very special place, like just dedicated. It's the perfect size and very much curated towards, you know, jazz and, you know, avant-garde music and all that stuff.
Cool.
But... You know, you can have a great experience there, and you can have a equally great experience playing in the Czech Republic in some small town. You know, it's more about just the audience and the kind of dynamic between the band and the audience and the space than anything else.
But I will say that touring the U.S. for us is I think we all agree is really wonderful. We've really spent years building audiences in the United States and. I know it can sound like, because it used to sound like to me as a young musician before I was traveling and playing in Europe and places like South America and Japan and things like that, that it sounds, you know, like, wow, you know, like whatever. But actually, you know, being able to play this music in Tampa as well mm-hmm. is unbelievable. And being able to go wherever. And at this point in time, I know maybe the three of us share this opinion.
you know, touring Europe is very difficult on your body, on your, you know, just the time zone scenes you're dealing with multiple times a year. You typically are you know, flying every day, sometimes doing a lot of country hopping because, you know, it's not routable a lot of the time to have it make sense like it is in
easily
the States.
Routable.
So if we go and play the West Coast in the United States, it's really this routable situation. Yeah. Everybody's rested. So when you're in Europe, you're in Sweden, and then you're in Italy the next day, and then you're in Germany for two days, and then you're back to Italy for a day. Then you're, and this is like, oh yes, you're. But actually, you feel physically
exhausting.
It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. And so I can personally say that although we live for the shows and the beautiful audiences everywhere, the idea of touring Europe, anytime I even see the tours on the schedules, I think, wonderful to be asked to play anywhere, and I'm now preparing to feel like absolute hell for 3 weeks.
To mentally prepare yourself
and
for
whatever.
That.
And that's just the way that it is. I don't know anyone that travels and plays music that doesn't feel the same way.
Sure.
I'm not going, woo, we're going back to Sweden, everybody. I can't wait. Let's get up at 4 a.m. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's just like it we're just going where the shows will take us and trying to survive it physically and also do the best show we can when we're tired and you're eating one meal for the day because you've been on trains all day and blah blah blah.
Sure.
Blah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, other than going out and not being afraid to seek out new music, new things, is there any other advice that you might want to give to one of our student musicians or any musician? One thing that...
Well, that was a good one that you said right there. Go out and seek out...
We unfortunately spoke about it at length already. So.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah.
There it is.
Any practice tips, habits,
practice tips,
you know, anything.
Something that keeps you on
musician.
Top, that you feel keeps you on top.
Eat a
routine,
healthy breakfast.
Yeah, anything.
I don't know.
I mean, for me, basically, it's just continue, which is, it all goes back to what you just said, but to continue to allow yourself to be inspired.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, and we all can get to that place, like, oh, I don't want to check that out. I don't want to check that out. There might be something in there that helps you compositionally or whatever. So don't be afraid to be inspired continue to check out all the music, which ultimately goes back to what you're saying. And as far and schedules, writing out, I've just started really doing that and sticking to it. So write a schedule, because I know a lot of younger people have trouble practicing. Mm-hmm. So map that time out where you're just going to do that. Map that time out where you're going to do whatever else you have to do. And just try it. You know, you're going to go off schedule, but keep trying to stick to that schedule.
Yeah, that's great.
Reed?
I don't know. I guess on a practical level, it's good to finish what you start as much as possible. And, you know, don't underestimate the power of your imagination. You know, really, really embrace your imagination and cultivate that. Don't let the prevailing forces of conformity get you down, you know?
Sure.
Words of wisdom.
I mean, obviously, that's covering a lot right there.
Yeah.
I think my advice for any young musicians is to try to balance the incredible amount of information that's available to you with getting inside of it with a certain amount of depth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the biggest challenge, and it's actually affected us being people who grew up without the internet and cell phones and everything. We're probably the original LP generation, in fact. I remember CDs coming along in the late 80s, whenever I was already a full-blown attempting to be a professional musician. So I would say that, you know, I attribute some of the knowledge I have about this music with the fact that it's a pain in the ass to turn an LP over. And so I would listen to side A of every classic record for a month, and then I would turn it over and listen to side B for a month. And so you
it's
get
like
to know
the
tones
twice.
And you get to know the languages.
More intimately.
And I just think that with the amount of information available, just being able to zero in on some of the things, it's like a great tool to be inspired all the time and have things you can take in and consume and create this new voice. And I just think that it's also important, too, to just hear the nuanced depth of all of the texts that there are to discover. So try your best to balance
all that's out there, the oceans of things that are out there.
Right.
Like, how about start with listening to a song in its entirety before you turn it off? We'll start there. Yeah.
That's great. That's good stuff.
It is good stuff. I do the same thing, similar thing with albums. I'll put an album in, car, wherever it might be, and I listen to it over and over and over and almost burn myself out on it until I want to listen to something different. But when I come back to that album again, you know, I feel like I'm friends with it.
Have
you
some
know?
Intimacy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know everything about it.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I think is being a little bit lost in the sea of streaming is who's on this record? What are the photographs? What were the sessions like? What is this? What was the order intended?
More album artwork.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I just think that there's a whole other experience that the record industry has possibly not considered that is a treasure to a lot of people.
Yeah.
That sort of has just been sort of given away.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's an experience I still treasure greatly, is buying a record and sitting with it and looking at it and holding it and having that experience with it. And I think that, yes, the ease of being able to say, play that song is all there for everybody, and it's seductive. But, man, if you go back and you just go, I'm putting on a record, you're going to listen to it closer. You're going to know who played. You know, I'd like to ask, who played drums on these tunes that everybody's listening to? I have children. I'm like, do you guys even know the band name? Do you know the, do you know the members' names of these completely heinous groups you're listening to?
I mean, because I want to know who they are. Right.
Yeah, who? So what is? Who's the, what, yeah, what,
I want to talk to them.
Well, yeah. What's the drummer of Bastille's name? You know what I mean? It's like
probably has one.
Yeah, that's right. A name or a drummer? You never know.
Right.
Real person.
So, any new projects on the horizon? What's next for you guys?
And then if you want to just, you know, kind of plug the band, where we can find you on social media, website, Facebook, all the, you know, whatever your specific things, you can mention that so everybody knows where to find you guys.
Well, we have a website.
Yes.
Badplus.com.
There you go.
Where you can also find some records and shirts and things.
Cool.
Perfect.
Our new record, Never Stop 2, is out. It is not streaming. It's downloadable on iTunes. And it's orderable in CD and LP form that will be shipped anywhere.
Excellent.
And we're going to try and make a new record this spring, maybe early spring. And we have a pretty full tour schedule in 2019. So we're a road band naturally, and so we rarely go a month without being somewhere out there.
Got you some new tires for 2019. You're ready to roll.
Yeah, yeah, and we have a Facebook, I think, which is the Bad Plus on Facebook. I think we have
Instagram.
Make it simple and easy for people to find.
You can look up just incredible amounts of really interesting stuff that we put up there once every 6 or 7 months. It's on point.
Awesome.
The best place, just go to thebadplus.com, and that'll direct you.
Yeah, there's tour dates
and
everything up there. But there's a Facebook site as well. You can find it.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No. Oren has a LinkedIn profile that you guys got to check out. It's pretty killing.
Noted.
He changes it a lot. It's like my head spins every time. So much new information. That's what I wanted to add. Yeah, needed it. He puts the different dates up. It's very confusing.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for being part of Jazz Happens, and we hope to hope to see you again. But we'll see you tonight at the show.
Jazz Happens.
Maybe
tonight.
Next time you come through town, we can do this interview again.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.